This week on The Droids, the Book of Boba Fett, Episode 2, we're going to talk all of the Tusken Raider knowledge, the lore that's being built up, the Tusken Raiders finally getting their moment to shine. This week on The Droids. Welcome back to The Droid You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. And alongside Ryan and Sam, I am Mike, thrilled to have Sam back with us. Sam, have you been lost in a Sarlacc pit and finally climbed your way out? Did you use a flamethrower? Did you use some sort of oxygen mask or your jetpack? How'd you get out of that Sarlacc pit?
I was digging around. I found the little stick that Harrison used to help what's his face climb out, climb out.
Lando is what's his face.
I found that stick and I sort of jammed open the mouth of the Sarlacc pit.
That is what we'll call it, because we all know what I think it looks like.
And squidgied my way out of there.
I once was stuck in a Sarlacc pit, and I started digging my way out. Found out 3 days in, I was digging down. Thought, you know what? I've already gotten this far. Just dug through to the other side of the planet.
Hasn't there been somewhere in lore where there was, like, the exit of the Sarlacc pit? It's got to be some sort of waste, right?
The exit is a nice way to put it.
Right?
Yeah.
That's what I'm trying to put, you know.
Exit of the Sarlacc pit look like a mouth?
Yes. It actually looks... very comforting, very friendly to anyone. Yeah, that's how you work it out. Well,
I mean, we should be honest though. Like we're all glad that those shots are in there, right?
Boba Fett, the inside
of the Sarlacc.
Yeah, it would have been difficult to communicate his escape any other way.
Well, no, but yeah.
I mean, maybe you're leading into this. What's weird is that, like, it's been in the EU forever that he escapes the Sarlacc pit, right? Yeah. But, like, everybody's shocked that, like, Patton Oswalt called it.
That's
but it's
I
like
said.
Patton Oswalt was familiar with the EU. Did we talk about this last time?
Yeah, we talked about it last time. And
Are you talking about Legends? You keep saying EU. I don't know what that is.
They call it Legends now, don't they?
I don't know.
You're
what
right.
That is.
The canon is an episode, an outtake from an episode of Parks and Rec.
Yeah. But I still think it's hilarious to me because, again, it's like that was the least interesting thing he said in his made-up rant. Like, there
yeah,
were so many
about
other...
the Infinity Gauntlet and stuff, too.
And yet everybody's latching onto it and like, wow, you know, 450,000 retweets later, wow, wasn't that a genius thing to
and
pair
now
the
every,
two scenes together?
Everybody knows this underground comedian, Patton Oswalt, that was so funny. And now everybody knows about him.
Well, I think, you know, you just got to give a lot of credit to Jon Favreau because did what the fans wanted and what Patton Oswalt wanted and what everybody was talking about.
He listened to Patton Oswalt.
Yeah.
He did what the fans wanted and he listened to Patton Oswalt.
You know, anytime we get a little bit more Favreau screen time, I think we're all happy. And that's not meant to be a pun, but it is when Happy Hogan is getting some time and getting a lot of spotlight in Spider-Man No Way Home. You know, this is the Jon Favreau universe.
Is this the year that Favreau finally gets a supporting actor nomination for his role as Happy Hogan? Hasn't it been long enough?
nominate him for the Oscar.
No Way Home is sweeping the Oscars.
Well, you think of that cast, he certainly is got to be the number two bill behind Holland, right? I mean, no one else in that cast.
Criminally
anywhere.
Overlooked for his performance is Happy Hogan.
You know, that cheeseburger line in Endgame, it itself deserves its own award.
Right. He did a bit of emotional acting there in 26 films. And I'm not saying, and I like Happy Hogan. I do. I think he's a fun character. And that cheeseburger line was great.
It was.
It was a really great moment. It was a really great
moment.
He's been criminally overlooked for all of the movies.
It is really lucky when we think back that he did cast himself in the first Iron Man.
It's really also very lucky that he has saved Star Wars, really, because, you know, there is no Star Wars without Jon Favreau.
By retroactively creating it?
Yeah, he did.
Yeah.
Didn't we say before we started recording we were going to start on a positive note? I feel like
I've heard of canon being retconned, but I've never heard of reality being retconned. Except, sadly, I have also.
Sam,
Go ahead.
Well, I would say, Sam, we haven't heard your Book of Boba Fett episode one thoughts, but I think we want to save that after we do a little bit of our things we enjoyed about episode two, because I think we might go down a little bit too far of a different rabbit hole if we start talking about your Book of Boba Fett episode one thoughts. Is that fair?
That's fair. Look, I'm just glad to be back. I'm along for the ride. I'm like that. I'm like that guy sitting on the back of the speeder.
There you go. Do you also have no ability to take off your mask?
Oh, are those masks?
I think
they're masks. I'm just.
Let me ask a question for you. Did anybody expect that in the show about Boba Fett that if you really counted out the minutes, it's got to be like 65% helmet off, right?
Yeah, probably. I'd say the majority. Yeah. It seems like. I mean,
I'll say Tamora has a really good agent.
I was surprised. In general, I was surprised at how much the show in both the first two episodes is like focused on flashback. And I'm curious, like, if
and
that's
not a flashback
be...
that we thought it would be with like the flashback back to like his earlier
not the interesting
days.
Flashback we were all hoping for, not like him growing up on Kamino or like going around as a kid learning how to be a bounty hunter. None of that.
They flashback
about 3 weeks.
It's kind of there's this weird obsession, like, it, I mean, you can tell it's like, you know, this is Favreau building out Favreau's world, right? Of like, well, I really want to see how he, you know, how he got from the Sarlacc pit where we left him to then when he shows up you know, on everybody's universal favorite episode of season two.
I want to see how Boba Fett, as a man in his 50s and 60s, who had become a really corporate bounty hunter, became more in touch with his indie roots and became that kind of bounty hunter. That's what I want to explore.
Do you think that Boba Fett also
Oliver
has a problem?
Platt complained about how he was getting too corporate, making molten chocolate cake. And that's, I'm realizing that I actually have a pretty solid Favreau.
Yeah, it's pretty good.
I think so. And I understand that after Mike's Matt Berry last week, that this may seem like nothing.
But no, this is funny, Ryan, because I would actually nominate you for an Obie for your performance of Favreau in his Oscar-winning year.
They'll say I was riding his coattails. Oh, now he has a Favreau impression. The year that he's getting a supporting actor nom.
What I really want, though.
Who doesn't have a Favreau impression this year?
What I really
we've all been
like.
Inside so long. We had so
everybody's
much
got a walk in. Everybody's got a Michael Caine. Everybody's got a Favreau.
You know, last week, Ryan, I said to you, I don't want to see Tamara Morrison with a Bantha gaffer stick beating the crap out of anybody ever again, because I've seen it enough.
Right.
But in reality, what I really want to see him do is go find the influencer outside of his establishment and take a gaffa stick to him and tell him how much social media is ruining everything.
I think that people would get so much more of our jokes if they would just go watch Jon Favreau's Chef.
Basically.
I'm afraid these jokes are falling on deaf ears and that the overlap of Star Wars and Chef fans isn't big enough.
I mean, that assumes it's falling on any ears, Ryan, which is, I think, generous.
Hey, we've got a solid base. They listen. They tune in. And again, with that in mind, email us, droidspot@gmail.com. Let us know about your thoughts of the Favreauverse. What's your favorite part of the Favreauverse?
Is it made?
And, of course,
is it
from Rudy? And
I
who's
do
the
like
wild
Elf,
man?
Of course.
Yeah, well, I've been watching a lot of Elf lately, and, you know, you got to give a lot of credit.
It's great. I mean, it really is great.
I've never seen it.
Oh, it's great. It's funny. Good. It's great. Yeah.
Yeah. It's anyway. Very well made. He you know, he does have a nice cameo role where he does tell James Caan that he is the father.
He is, as usual, the inciting incident of his own movie.
You know, I heard he picked that up from Hitchcock. Did you guys know that Hitchcock used to do that?
It's because he's not allowed to say Woody Allen anymore. And like Shyamalan took the Hitchcock thing and he was like, oh, I could say Woody Allen. And then he's like, no, now I got to say Hitchcock too.
Wow. So follow us, of course, on Facebook, Twitter, Instagram. Check us out. We're back and we're talking Book of Boba Fett every week. And so as we start episode two, I want to talk about the positives before we get into some of the things, because I think, you know, we can probably tell a little bit for those of you who listen to our episode one recap and where we're at in episode two. We might be going down the road of finding some issues and taking some issues with things. But in the starting things off, I think one of the things that this show has done well here, it was better in episode two. I guess I would start with, did you enjoy episode two more than episode one?
Yeah.
Sure.
I mean, I enjoyed episode two. I mean, I would say immeasurably more than episode one, but I mean, there was, for me, a very low bar to start. Like, episode two didn't have to do a lot. You know, and I would say that, you know, maybe my biggest positive or, you know, reason for why was I thought episode two just like looked a lot better. It was more fun to look at. And that's, I think, thanks to,
yeah.
Do you guys know who shot this? Dean Cundey was the cinematographer on this, which is insane.
Who is that?
Yeah, I would say I'm not as familiar with.
Carpenter's guy. He was like, he shot a lot of the early Carpenter stuff.
Cool. All right, cool.
Yeah. He's like, he's one of those cinematographers who's been around a long time. I think eventually he split from Carpenter and, did he work with, now I'm going crazy. I know he's not, Spielberg's guy is Janusz Kaminski.
That's Janusz Kaminski, yeah. I'll look it up. Don't worry. I forget who he went to. I'll get it for you.
But I thought this one, you know, there's wider shots in this episode. I thought that the use of the volume was less jarring in this episode. And there's just more interesting kind of like tableaus and choreography. And again, so purely on... I don't mean this to sound as stupid as it's going to sound, but like a huge part of watching TV and movies for me is the literal, just like, how do I feel looking at it? You know, it's why when I watch the Bond movies, for all of you playing along with our Droids Pod drinking game, that's one, that's a mention of Bond, you know, the ones that are my favorites because I've seen them all so many times. It's less about story and more about kind of like photography, you know, and like where do I want to, what
right,
what tone do I want to sit in. So this, you know, that was the maybe the first and biggest difference for me between episode one and episode two. And then I have another thing I liked about two that I could say another positive, but just what did you guys think of the
follow up, because it'll drive the fans insane if I don't. Dean Cundey was Spielberg's guy for a little bit. He shot most notably Jurassic Park. And he was Zemeckis's guy for a while. So through all of the Back to the Futures, Who Framed Roger Rabbit, he also shot Apollo 13 and early Carpenter stuff. So a very accomplished cinematographer.
Got it.
Yeah, that's if you guys have heard of, I don't know, any movie that's kind of in like the like...
You ever heard of Amblin?
If you like the nostalgia wave that's happening now, then it's because of movies this guy shot.
Yeah. And it makes sense that Robert Rodriguez would call him.
Well, not for the first episode, because Robert Rodriguez...
He did not.
I think,
he probably shot that himself.
Yeah, I thought the first episode looked like it had a Robert Rodriguez budget, for sure.
Yeah, it was one of those that like his son wrote the script and his daughter held the camera and he... He shot right, it well, in his... He called right, Bruce hey, Willis well, and they shot it alone.
Ryan, what else you got on your positive notes?
That is what I liked about it, that it's a family affair. Here's the thing. And listen. Listen, I didn't ask for this role, but I'll play it. Positive things.
So difficult.
It was in focus.
Oh, boy.
No, I don't have... we'll get to it. I don't have negative things to say about it either. It's just... What's so upsetting to me is how middling this show is.
Yeah.
So that's what I'll say. It's not bad. I'll say that I have trouble finishing episodes because I'm just like... I'll get to my metaphor when Sam gets to his mysterious second point. But Mike, you should say nice things too.
Well, look, I did enjoy this episode more. It also felt far too familiar. You know, right. How many have we had? At least I would say 3 train robberies, even though one of them wasn't a train. Was the train in The Mandalorian where they're going to the base?
Right. Star Wars is, of course, a Western.
It is. But then you also think of the Solo train robbery, and it's just like, all right, how many times are we going to do a train, you know, jump on Rob, which was never a part of original Star Wars. So it's interesting. Again, they're taking it out of the Westerns, which is fine, which was cool to do it once, maybe twice. But I felt like, all right, I liked the plight of the Tusken Raiders.
Once a year.
But the plight of the Tusken Raiders, to be fair, it is funny to me. Somebody within Lucasfilm or somebody was like, you know what, maybe it was Favreau. Boy, they were done dirty by that Anakin Skywalker. We got to give the Tusken Raiders their moment in the sun with The Mandalorian and now with Boba Fett. And that being said, to take the Tusken Raiders and make it a story that was something that connected to indigenous people, that was cool. That was a good idea. That was something that could resonate with a different audience. So I'll give that credit though it is interesting because for once it's like Temuera Morrison is in the role of a white savior, even though he's not the white savior. Like, he's basically speaking for them and solving the problems for them and then telling, you know, these elites who are coming through and killing them off the train, you know, these people know these sands better than you. And it's like, okay, it's just funny because it's like sort of felt like, oh, you know, all those other white savior movies that have come before, but instead it's Temuera Morrison.
Well, but doesn't that then make it – doesn't – isn't – I don't know. That makes me think of something like it's – in some ways, doesn't that make – the Tusken Raiders more problematic both now and before, like by sort of grafting, you know, indigenous peoples, you know, the story of indigenous peoples kind of the world over and grafting that culture onto the Tusken Raiders, doesn't it sort of make their portrayal in Star Wars more problematic because they are just sort of like this, like, you know, barely like subhuman.
Sure,
because now they have an analog that people, you know, are comparing it to, as opposed to like.
And yeah. Now, like you say, they're portrayed as, you know, proud and resourceful, but ineffectual against modern. You know, and it's like once again, it's like, okay, so like you say, it's. I know what you're saying with like a white construct. Savior analog,
yeah,
but it's obviously not that, but it's still the idea of like the bumbling native is kind of like what they end up as, you know. I mean, they can't even ride speeder bikes.
I found that whole sequence kind of funny. My favorite part about that though is when someone put on sports training montage from South Park as the background song in a clip after that episode ran. Like, that always makes me laugh. But I found that at least interesting. But again, you're right. It goes back and doesn't, you know, Obi-Wan in the original trilogy say something about how they're savages or that they're, you know, they're unorganized. These are single files. Tusken Raiders.
They will be single file to conceal their numbers.
Hide their numbers. Yeah. So actually that's a credit to the Tusken Raiders being smarter at that time. But, you know, you go back and you make some other concerns there. However, other things I liked in this, I don't know anything about the character, but I kind of was intrigued by Black Kirstan. I don't know how you say the Wookiee who is the bounty hunter. Mm-hmm. I was like, cool. This seems like a good idea. I mean, I don't know. The idea of an evil Wookiee, we haven't really seen that on screen before, have we? I don't think that's been on screen.
We've not seen
it. It's been in canon before.
Sure,
But it's interesting because I think they kind of, afterwards, they played it for this moment of like, wow, don't you know? And that character of Black Kirstan or whatever was only introduced in 2015 in a comic book. So it's not like this is a long-standing character that has been introduced. But anyway, I found that intriguing. I found the idea of the twins also interesting, though. The timeline of like, they didn't care when Bib Fortuna was running the show because Jabba's been dead for 5 years, presumably. That's the difference of the timeline between where we're at. And they only come back when Boba takes over. No one was like, all right, whatever, Bib's still reporting to us, I guess. So it's interesting that they come to claim stake. I didn't mind the CGI. I thought the CGI of the twins looked better than the original CGI of the special editions of Jabba.
I thought it was so funny though, because they really stuck to it.
Yeah.
Like, it looked like they just did a better better execution of the design.
Yeah.
Of that Jabba, which I thought was funny.
That definitely was funny.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's cool to see, like,
that's the kind of the design that they've used on, like, Clone Wars and stuff. You know, it's like they've always
and also
like that's kind of become the Hutta, I don't know, like physiognomy.
I loved watching those who were carrying the twins.
So funny.
Like,
that
it was
funny.
So great that they actually had them commit to being uncomfortable the whole time as they were carrying that. I just thought that was great. I do, you know, speaking the opposite of CGI, the puppetry of the mayor, of the Ithorian mayor, was great. I really liked the way that looked. I thought there was just kind of very cool scene in the back and forth there. And, you know, the advice about bounty hunting is very different than running a crime syndicate or a family or whatever. Right. I like that. And then the design of the characters that ended up being the villains on the train, those practical effects there, once again, I think we've seen those helmets, I believe, in Solo, but we hadn't seen underneath those helmets before. And I thought that was kind of cool, and you could kind of see portions of their head that stuck out from the helmet. So I'll give respect to that, but that's probably what I liked most about all of it. You know,
it's so weird because it's like, imagine if you asked someone how a movie was and they were like, I mean, the costumes were really good. And you'd be like, yeah, well, that's cool. I mean, that's a big part of it, certainly. Don't get me wrong. And any costumers out there who are listening, it is an essential part of it. But it is like a weird thing where it's like the puppets were good.
It is. But I mean, I'm underplaying the fact that I did like the idea of a mission of the week. I just would have enjoyed it better if it was, you know, not been something I'd seen twice already in Star Wars recently.
Or if it was relevant by, like, not being something that happened 4 weeks ago that's actually distracting from, like
well,
I think
see,
what's
technically
bugging
it
me
is,
about
it's,
the
it's
whole
a
thing.
It's a 5-year story. So that's, what? Like, Return of the Jedi is 5 years prior to the start of The Mandalorian, and we're seeing him after The Mandalorian in real time. So it's like 5 years was when he was with the Tusken Raiders 5 years ago.
Right, and I guess I'm just only interested in the modern story.
Yeah, fair.
Also,
which is
it's like
a
weird,
huge problem for this show.
Totally.
It's weird because we're seeing flashbacks, and I understand he's picking up some things, but we're seeing flashbacks to, like, him, quote-unquote, training after he is supposed to, like, have already been an expert.
Yeah.
So, like, that's weird. Where it's like, I understand that they're, like, teaching him more how to use, like, the staff or, like, the rifle, but at the same time, it's like he was already the most feared bounty hunter in the galaxy.
Well,
so, like,
maybe they're trying to justify why he was easily dispatched by Han Solo in Return of the Jedi. Be like, wait, maybe he wasn't that good, so let's see him get better. I don't know.
Oh my god. But okay, so I'm gonna use I've used this metaphor in our text chain, but I've fleshed it out more. To me, this is a little bit like, and Mike, I tried so hard to find a wings metaphor for this, but I just didn't think that it would be as widespread.
All right,
you know,
let me see if I can
understand.
Internalize it as you're talking, and then
right,
I'll
okay. So, like, pretend I'm saying Faye. So this is like if they were like, we're gonna do a spinoff of the show Friends, and it's gonna be called Gunther, and it's gonna be about Gunther, and you were like, okay, all right. So what does Gunther do? And they were like, mostly hangs out at the coffee shop that he hangs out in the show Friends. And you were like, okay, but is it going to be like Gunther? It's going to be about, like, Gunther going home to Chicago. Is Gunther maybe from Chicago? And it's like, no, he's from New York. And it's like, okay, but what is he doing? And it's like, mostly hanging out with his friends. They're all New Yorkers. And, you know, there's, like, a funny one and, like, a ditzy one and, like, a sarcastic one. And they're going to be in New York and they're going to be at the coffee shop a lot. But sometimes they won't be at the coffee shop. And it's like, oh, like, cool. Like, where else will they be? And it's like, mostly offices and apartments. And you're like, okay. So now it's a show Gunther. And it's mostly in the coffee shop and around New York City. And they're getting into shenanigans. And they're like, yeah. And that's how I feel about this. Which is like, okay, it's Boba Fett. He's on Tatooine, which is one of the places we saw The Mandalorian. But the Mandalorian then left Tatooine, and we're just kind of staying on Tatooine. and it looks mostly like the other planets that the Mandalorian also went to. Mm-hmm. And they're going to have a mission of the week kind of thing where he does things like deal with people in the underworld of the Star Wars universe. And, you know, kind of helps people along the way as he can. And, you know, is dealing with, you know, scoundrels and stuff like that. And it's like, all right, cool. So it's the Mandalorian. It's not even a different costume, really. Yeah. And they seem to have solved that issue by having him not wear the cool costume.
I know. They basically,
which I wish
he was. I think that you're right. I think the internal conversation is like, well, the Mandalorian's done so well. Let's not undercut that at all and make people think they're exactly the same. So he won't wear it as much. And it's like, God, come on. The whole reason we cared about the character was because he looked cool.
Yeah, that's a good point.
They didn't even give him a cool baby to like, take care of.
This is... I agree with everything you guys are saying, and that's a problem for the show. I'm happy for Temuera Morrison. Like, I find him, generally speaking, like an interesting person to look at, and like a fairly compelling screen presence. I think he has like a physical presence, which is, you know, how he originally got cast as Jango Fett. I think it's great that like. That role he did of Jango Fett, which obviously was, you know, the prequels were not beloved in their time. I think it's cool that he's getting to do this. I like seeing him, and so I actually, the suit, the no mask, the whatever, like that's all kind of rad. I mean, the Uncle Fester vibe is kind of not a great look. Like I actually liked his like under spacesuit look. You know,
yeah,
like,
I love what he
wore this episode. I thought was like. Actually pretty cool throughout. It was like, oh yeah, uh-huh. It's like kind of a flight suit. He's like a spaceman living with what we've kind of found to be like he's with these natives now and everything, and he's kind of, you know, Boba with wolves. I liked it, and I like seeing him. I do find, what if we're talking about his look, I sent you guys off mic pre-record, I sent you guys this video I found because
how he found it, we don't know. And it's I'm better if tell you don't ask yourself this question, too.
No, I immediately looked this up after the first episode. I was like, does Temuera Morrison have caps? I found he has porcelain veneers, and his teeth are so distracting, I find, because he has a very prominent overbite, I think naturally. And he's got these veneers that are like super bright white, and they stand out because so much of this is like done in the volume with like, you know, projected backgrounds and stuff. There's just something like color wise, like his teeth, like watch it. His teeth like really pop. They really jump out. And maybe that's a credit to the doctor who you get introduced to in this video. Maybe that's a credit to his work, but there's a video from 10, actually, I guess 11 years ago, that Temuera Morrison had laser, like, dental work done and new veneers put in, or veneers put in, porcelain, and he just, like, did a video for the guy in Auckland, New Zealand, where he had the work done as, like, a promo. And it's very, you know, it's very charming because, like, for the first testimonial, first part of the testimonial, he's clearly high as a kite. Like after his 4-hour oral surgery, he can't even smile or lift his mouth. And then he comes back and they cut and everybody's wearing different clothes. And it's like, yeah, it's been 2 weeks. I feel great. Look, I don't know. The only value in my bringing this up is I'm glad for the guy. I hope he's happy with them. I think they look great. It's great work. But I do think it's like it is weird that like they kind of jar with like the CG and the cinematography. Like they're just like, oh, they're pure white. They're not like colored like teeth. They're pure white, which
this
is not the color.
This isn't somebody who just crawled out of a Sarlacc pit.
No.
That's what you're saying.
No.
Can I say something that I thought of while you were saying this?
Yeah, please.
I'm going to try to get it out. Okay. Tooth molar Morrison. I'm going to say it slower. Tooth molar Morrison. Just saying. You can also go with Tooth Mora Molerson. If you
like. I like that one better. I like that one better.
Toothmora Molerson.
Yeah, I found it legitimately like it.
And I think we could all say that since we've been aware of him in the prequels, we've all been rooting for Temuera Morrison's dental health.
Oh, absolutely. Guy looked.
That was one of the things you just couldn't help but think about when you saw him.
I always thought, hey, man,
he's got to do something.
I didn't see his teeth in that movie that I can remember, and I thought maybe it's because he doesn't feel good about his teeth, but I wouldn't know. And now,
should
we know that he was having a bit of a glow up of 10 or 11 years ago, and that he went in. And this doctor, I don't know anything about his personal life, but it seems to do good work.
Oh yeah, yeah. I think. I mean,
if you're in the Auckland area,
if you watch the video, I mean, you're liable to sign up to get a pair of caps, a set of caps. I don't know what they're called.
Well, a pair.
You know, all right. Well, more, let's, on, one
on
thing
Temuera,
to get
on
back
Morrison,
on track,
on Temuera like Morrison. You know, you talked to Mike about the. You know, the sort of like indigenous story that's given to the Tusken Raiders, and how that does actually tie in directly with Temuera Morrison. Cause at the end, I think, they're kind of doing a play on like the Hakka dance, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
Which is, I think that has to be, I would imagine that is a cool experience for Temuera Morrison.
Yeah.
You know, to be able to bring that and kind of populate, you know, a franchise like Star Wars with something of his native culture, you know, and his own background, and bring it into the world as, you know, in a galaxy far, far away, as it were.
Yeah. I imagine that has to be a huge sense of pride.
So I liked seeing that. I thought that was neat.
Where do we have any better idea of where this is going for the rest of the season? Do we think, what did they call the assassins? I can't remember the name of them, but the knight something or wing. I don't remember what they were, that were caught at the beginning. Cause it was made to believe that the mayor did not send them.
Oh, or, yeah. I don't,
do we think that there's another, basically, is this like a Marvel series? Is Kingpin hanging out in the wings, and we're waiting for some other big bad to come in before the end of this? Because going back to what you were talking about before, Ryan, I just blow up continuity for a minute. You know what? I don't care about the continuity. If you want to do week-to-week missions, have Boba get a bounty each week, and let's see what that bounty is, and have him never take his helmet off, and have it be awesome bounty
hunting.
Make the
show we all thought The Mandalorian was going to be.
Yeah.
Before we knew how good The Mandalorian could be.
How great that was, yeah.
We were all excited to just see the Boba Fett show that The Mandalorian was going to be.
Yeah.
So you could just make that one.
Because, weekly mission, that's all you
need.
Because
you didn't give the baby, you know what I mean?
Yep.
And you could cast what comedian? Sebastian Maniscalco could surprise us all with his performance. And
I think we're going to see something like that, though, because here's what I want to throw out. Like, both The Mandalorian and The Book of Boba Fett have kind of done this so far, which is that, like, it does seem to me, like, somewhat calculated on an episode-by-episode basis of how much they're playing into, like, this is what fans want. Like, like pure fan service. Because I'm thinking of, like, you know, obviously, like, We satiated the Luke boys' thirst for blood, robo blood, at the end of season two of The Mandalorian, right? And we gave you know, Luke his own hallway scene that we'd all been clamoring for. But then you have that mixed in with like episodes like, you know, where they introduce Ahsoka, or the episode where you have, you know, him and Bill Burr infiltrating the Empire stores, right, that are like compelling and interesting, or like episode two, the Ant-Man director episode, where it was like you know, the weird like cavern with the bugs and stuff.
Oh,
like,
yeah,
you know, there's
he did the finale though too.
Yeah,
like every did he? Oh,
yeah,
that pain sucks.
Well, the finale up until that moment was like good.
Yeah, the finale is pretty good television.
Like,
I just don't agree with the choices.
Like, Bo-Katan and stuff, that was all, like, great stuff.
Yeah.
I don't remember it.
I don't really remember it, I guess. But anyway, I felt that way about this show too, where I was like, oh, the first episode is like the Sarlacc pit, and then he fights like a Harryhausen monster, which feels very like sort of like lowest common denominator. Like, and then this episode was trying to do something interesting. I liked the little like up the nose lizard, you know, peyote trip that was like,
oh yeah,
that was like weird, and that was weird. That was like kind of weird and cringy and gross, and like,
and we know how we like Star Wars when it's weird.
Yeah,
yeah.
Do you think? I'm realizing as I'm watching this, do you think that they're retroactively trying to make us connect to Luke more at the beginning of A New Hope? Some call it Star Wars. Because I got to tell you, I feel like I'm never going to make it off Tatooine either. I feel trapped on this goddamn planet. Mike couldn't bear the idea of me getting that punchline. I'm starting to feel trapped on Tatooine watching Star Wars stuff, that I'm just like, am I ever going to get off? And even when it's not Tatooine, it is Tatooine. You know what I mean?
Jakku.
Yeah.
The funny thing is, it's like, I'd rather all of them be Tatooine than, you know, than like other planets just being placeholders for Tatooine. Yeah, but I also want them to be more creative than Tatooine.
I kind of feel like if you're on Tatooine, why not make everything we're seeing on Tatooine something we've seen before? So spend 5 episodes in the cantina. Don't go to a new cantina to beat the shit out of people. Go to the same cantina we know. You know you're only doing
if you're already placating this part of our brains.
Yeah. Just
you know what I mean?
That's a good
point. Tell me that like, oh man, like Mos Eisley has a really bad womp rat infestation. Like, oh, we're going to have to hop in T-16s. You know, like, whatever.
Actually, they are doing that. Apparently, the place that he ended up and beat up that gang to get the speeders, apparently that's the Tashi station.
Okay.
I guess. I mean, I don't know how that was
clear.
Which,
again, is like...
Yeah, why is that?
That's only as cool as that moment where I'm just like, again, why am I still on Tatooine?
we haven't seen anybody shooting womp rats in a T-16 yet.
How many more references to previous Star Wars things do we have to get through before, like, eventually we'll be out of them? You know what I mean? They went to Tashi Station. They were bullseyeing womp rats on a T-16. At a certain point, is that what will get us off of Tatooine? That they've run out of references?
Because they have to make sure that every deleted scene is also referenced, such as the couple in the Tashi Station was from the deleted scene from A New Hope.
All of this is coming from them making references to things mentioned in the first 40 minutes of Star Wars.
The whole thing they're trying to do is like, I think structurally they're trying to work up to where we actually think of it. They're trying to work up to where we see the Waynes get murdered, and then we know why Bruce becomes
Hey, we already said in episode 1 that we thought we were watching Uncle Owen and Aunt Beru get murdered for a second, and then we realized it was the wrong timeline.
We were all confused with the timeline, because, like, how old is Boba Fett?
No idea.
Well, his teeth are only, like, 10 years old.
We know that.
I know we're...
What about the kid who played Boba Fett? This is the guy who played Jango Fett, also.
Yeah.
Where's the... Well, that kid's probably still acting. He's on Twitter and stuff.
He's on Twitter.
He didn't end up looking enough like Temuera Morrison to justify him being a clone of Temuera Morrison. So they were like, let's get Temuera Morrison, even though he's got new teeth.
Like we've said 1,000 times, just leave him the damn helmet. You don't need to worry about who the actor is. Just give him the helmet. The helmet's the thing you like. I like the helmet.
Yeah. Temuera Morrison puts the helmet on. They cut to Fennec Shand. Fennec Shand? Wait, what's her name?
Fennec.
Fennec Shand. I said Fennec Shand, and that's funny. Anyway, they cut to Fennec Shand. Like, they cut back. He's 20 years younger. We all accept it. It's fine.
Why not? We did get a little bit more of our good buddy Matt Berry as 8D8 as a droid. I'm still hoping for more from that character.
Give it, Mike. Do it. Do it for the people.
So I've been working on it. I'm trying to get a little better.
Oh wait, is he the droid that's in? Formerly Jabba's palace. Okay. I was trying to actually place, because I heard that on your guys' episode, and then I saw his name in the credits, and I think you texted about it, but I actually, then I was like trying to remember. I was like, what droids talk? But it's, he does talk. Okay. I'll listen.
Look here, Boba Fett. You can stick that gaffy stick between the twin sons of a bantha before I serve you in a metal bikini. I lost it.
that was good. You got to commit.
I had
that
it
was
for
good.
I had it for a moment.
Believe,
it's like
believe.
Look
remember
here.
How? Remember how all of the fan, the older fanboys were so mad because they were like, I could never like Kylo Ren. He killed Han Solo.
Yeah,
but like,
I could never like something that was storytelling that actually.
But
made
like,
a
or
good story.
Or that like did anything bad to Han Solo, and it's like, Boba Fett like, that was pretty bad, you know. Like, he delivered Han Solo as, like, a mantelpiece to Jabba the Hutt. And, like, everybody's okay with that? We're not even talking about it. This show isn't even interrogating that.
No.
That's all I'm saying.
They're not going to.
I want to see a flashback to how Jango Fett was, like, a really bad dad even before the Battle of Geonosis.
Oh, you know what? The only thing that intrigues me about this show... is that in the promo where they showed the new character on a motorcycle speeder. I don't know who she is, but I was like, okay, I don't know. That sounds like something.
I want to find out that Boba Fett had, you know, a forbidden relationship with one of those Kamino cloners. And probably. Then explore how he navigated, they as a couple navigated the fact that, his partner was 9 feet tall with a 4 foot neck.
But all right, dumb prediction here at the end. We know this is leading to some big character reveal
right.
At some point. We know this is probably going to have to, I don't know, set up. It can't set up Andor. It can't set up Obi-Wan, right? I mean, Obi-Wan would be the logical thing, but Obi-Wan takes place in the past. So
could you imagine if they just ignored it? And they
what if they just like go to Obi-Wan's grave on Tatooine, even though he didn't have a grave?
Yeah,
and they try
sure.
to be like, yeah, and Obi-Wan, come in summer 2022.
Was that Matt Berry again?
No. Should have been. Obi! I like that. That's not bad. But
well, say, you had a great prediction. You do.
No, I don't have one. I'm actually wondering, I want to ask all of you, who is this? Who's going to be the random like character that we've all seen 1,000 times that is going to make the moment where we get giant headlines about, oh, Star Wars brought back, whoa.
Star Wars finally brought back Star Wars.
Yeah.
Wait, Sam, was it you or was it Chris in the text chain that made the big prediction? It was Chris, right?
It was Chris, I think.
Well, whatever. Oh. He's been away for like 5 months on his vacation, so I'll say it for him. I will credit Chris, though. This was Chris's prediction that it is going to be Han Solo.
Oh, yeah.
As a CGI'd young Harrison Ford.
Or Alden?
I think it... I would
it's,
love,
it's after Return of the Jedi, so it can't
be Alden. I would love to see what
the
internet does. I would love to see what the internet does if it is Alden, because it's after the Return of the Jedi. But it would. His prediction with that it would be a young CGI'd Harrison Ford.
You know, because that really worked out well for Ghostbusters Afterlife.
We don't think it would just be something like either...
Well, Harrison Ford
either,
at least is alive.
I could see them doing Ahsoka, right? Because that's
oh,
coming
that
soon.
Oh, that actually
and,
makes...
And,
that actually,
and that,
well,
that,
that
timeline's going
to
work.
Sense.
Or
that,
oh,
that
what if it's Thrawn?
Yeah.
What if it's Thrawn?
Oh, that actually does make
that
sense,
That would be
too.
A real
Sam,
Marvel move.
It.
That would be a super. That would be a real Marvel move if they did that, because we know that she's after Thrawn.
That's
exactly
what
that's what
they're going to do. They're going to introduce Thrawn.
All right, mark it down. Just like we predicted Luke Skywalker coming in the finale, mark it down here. Episode 2 review, 43 minutes in. It's called Thrawn. Thrawn is in this series.
Who's going to play? Okay, so who's going to play Thrawn? Let's throw out predictions.
I think, didn't they say the original person who voiced Thrawn?
But I mean,
is
that would
actor.
Be good if it was Lars Mikkelsen, Matt,
yeah.
Brother to Mads Mikkelsen.
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, he could do it.
Otherwise,
my,
there was,
my guess
I saw
is
the
Mark
rumors. I saw the rumors of that a lot of the art at one of the celebrations was based off Pierce Brosnan, which it does kind of look like him.
Oh, yeah.
I don't know what he's doing right now. I don't know if he's tied up with anything, but
it's a shame that they already used him as the iconic character that we all know and love so much. Grand Admiral Pride, General Pride, because Richard E. Grant would be great.
Richard E. Grant would have been, yeah,
he would have been great. He would have actually. That's a very good point. Thanks,
well,
JJ.
But they
again,
needed, but
for
they needed
going to that
they
well
needed,
too early.
They needed that. They needed that character because they didn't have anybody who was like the military lead of the
yeah.
First Order in the first two movies.
They didn't
that
have
they could
like
use.
A schemy British man.
They didn't
well,
have
cause
somebody cast who was already a great like antagonist and would have been a great antagonist for Kylo Ren like becoming Ben Solo to like face off against. Like
yeah.
There was no like kind of like half brother that he could have like, you know,
he also couldn't
gone toe to toe with.
Impaled himself with a lightsaber to end the story about how he lost the Star Wars.
Oh my god.
That's
yeah.
from
that's
By the
from, way, I should say
Duel of the Fates.
We don't know them. So like this is just pure like fan-ness. But Skytalkers just recently did their overview of the Duel of the Fates script. And it was a really great episode.
I heard they didn't like the Poe Ray story, and that makes me mad.
They didn't, which we also didn't really.
I liked it. I did.
I actually
didn't like it so much as I liked the construct of you needing to use the Force to send someone you love away from you. That construct I liked a lot.
Right. Well, they go into it. They're very like vocal Raylos on that show, which I dig. But it was just like really cool. We also did our episodes. Theirs was a little more succinct. Huh. They say at the beginning, like, obviously we can't go through this scene by scene, and I was like, well, not so obvious. Because over here on the droids you're looking for.
Let's pull that clip and
they
then
they meant obviously we can't go through the scene by scene because it's already been done so
not
eloquently.
Expertly. No. But I do highly it's a great listen. That's a great show. It was cool just to think about Duel of the Fates again because you know it feels that came out so long ago.
I still have a poster of Rise of Skywalker I've yet to frame because I love Eric Tan who did an entire series of all 9 movies and I am going to put in a little piece of paper that says Duel of the Fates over Rise of Skywalker on that poster and that is how I will frame it.
Heck yeah,
I'm sure
dude.
He'll appreciate that.
Oh yeah, the artist. I'm sure I'll love that.
Yeah, I'm sure I'll love it.
But that's the way I'm doing it. Actually, Sam, I might need your help. Can you design up in a font Duel of Fates for me in the Star Wars font so I can put that in there?
Yeah, I think
Comic
I can.
Sans.
I think I can come up with something for you.
No, you use Comic Sans for Rise of Skywalker because Papyrus. That font quality is the same as the quality of the movie. Well, we have reached our time once again. This was fun. You know what? One thing we have is that this is great to come back and talk about Star Wars every week, as much as maybe always. Boba Fett isn't scratching the itch for us. It is still fun to watch some Star Wars, and it is still fun to live in the universe. You know what? It's nice to be in the universe for a bit.
I do have to... I agree, Mike. It's been really great to come back. I'd love to... I'll make as many of these as I can. I'll continue watching and continue listening when I can't be on. I do have to say, there's one other thing I liked about this episode. And I need to share it here at the end. I think the music, Ludwig Göransson.
It's actually
not
Ludwig. We were wrong. Ludwig only did the theme. Someone else is doing the rest of the music.
I'm talking about the theme. Okay. I'm talking about the theme because I think the theme song is actually really it kind of perfectly encapsulates the show. Ha! Dum 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 dum.
Wow.
I think you played us out pretty well right there.
I wanted to cut whatever runway you were building to get that in.
That will do it for the Droids You're Looking For, a Star Wars podcast. What they throw.
Dum 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 dum.
Obi!
Amma?
You boys want to go to the other times?